Well, the world is a dumpster fire, and nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good, and you're paralyzed with grief. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death, one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard. And guess what? I'm in Boston right now. That's right. The wife is getting her master's degree. She's graduating. It's pretty exciting stuff here in this household. But, you know, I wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about something that I've been feeling lately. And this feeling that I've been having, I thought it was seasonal affective disorder, and maybe that's part of it. But, you know, I think the biggest part is I've had so many things going on. I've been so busy, so blasted busy, that I just, I think I lost track of the here and now. And it's pretty important to keep yourself connected to the here and now. Because otherwise it's just your brain is somewhere else. Your heart is somewhere else. If you keep yourself distracted by everything that might happen or could happen or is in the future or is in another place. You know, my head's been in California and Boston and next week. And this weekend and tomorrow, it's been all over the place, everywhere except for here, where I am, doing what I'm doing right now, on the current task, in the current moment, in the current feeling. So I'm going to go ahead and commit. I'm going to go ahead and commit to being more present. I've been spending a lot of time worrying. It's something that I have wired into myself that I keep thinking I've pulled out. But it turns out you can always be doing better. And I can always be doing better. You know, the bipolar is just part of it. Now, speaking of the bipolar, today's guest is Kim Kamsikas. Now, she is not promoting a book or a stand-up comedy special or a band. She's just a person like any other person who's going through, you know, the bipolar blues, I guess is one way to put it. And for that reason, I was actually really excited to talk to her because I don't get an opportunity to talk to too many bipolar one people. In fact, I don't know if I really have. We had, you know, just a little bit ago, we had Joe Mondragon talking about his experience with bipolar 2, but bipolar 1 is a whole other bucket of syrup. That's where you get the high highs, you get the low lows, you enter that godlike state of mania. Ah, that's so wonderful, and then so bad when it crashes. And we have a really amazing conversation about a person who's lived a really fascinating life and done a lot with it in spite of everything. And I think that sometimes that can get lost when I'm talking to people in bands and, you know, people with stuff to promote. All of that is fine and good. In fact, I really love that people with a public persona are willing to come on and talk about things. But I think that the whole reason that that matters is because it lets us know that they're regular people too. That's what's so important, is figuring out that we're all in this together. But that's why I want to talk to, you know, the quote unquote regular people, because this is regular. Having a mental illness and having to get up in the morning and go to fucking work, that's normal. Getting your shit together and being a productive human being, and especially if you're a parent, you gotta handle your shit. You just have to. Now, I had an amazing conversation with her, and I am really proud of this one. And I think that you're going to love this conversation as well. So enough of me yapping in your ear. Let's talk to Kim. So you can have headphones if you want them. Some people like them, some people don't. But as long as you have the microphone somewhere at around your face, kind of.
Like there?
Yeah, that's...
If I don't move the whole table.
Yeah, here, we'll get it, like, right there.
Okay.
Good, perfect. And then we can talk.
There we go.
So, yeah, I started doing this... I've had... I was diagnosed with bipolar pretty young.
Okay.
And so I kind of dealt with it for a long, long time without any sort of medication. They tried getting me on a cocktail of things when I was little. I say little, I was a teenager.
Yeah.
They seemed to make things worse.
I understand that feeling all too well.
And so I kind of had a back and forth with trying different medications over and over and over again until I finally hit a cocktail. That
would have been my 20s,
Yeah, that was my 20s too, as a matter of fact. I had been off medication for probably a stretch in my late teens, right up into my early 20s. And I got married pretty young. And so when we were having our first kid, and it was like I was realizing that I still had a lot of suicidal ideation and mania and impulsive behavior and obsessive thought patterns and things. And I was like, I'm going to be somebody's dad. I can't sustain this.
Yep.
So I went and saw a therapist in conjunction with a psychiatrist.
Yep.
Because I wanted some tools.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. And then of course, cause I have the obsessive nature, I just worry an idea through like a dog with a bone.
Yeah.
It was if I'm stranded on a desert island, is my brain going to kill me?
Yeah.
And I thought for sure it would.
Yeah.
And, so with, against the advice of my therapist, I said, I want to go off meds. I want to see if I can get really good coping mechanisms and go off the meds. And also, I was a musician, and I was firmly believing that it was inhibiting my creativity. Mm-hmm. And some of that's true, some of it's not.
Right.
I mean, if you have talent, you can create a discipline.
Yeah.
And you can make it work. You can learn how to make it work when the muse isn't striking
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
But, you can't tell somebody in their 20s that.
No.
So.
No, in fact, I know people you can't tell in their 30s and 40s that.
Oh, yet. Yeah, completely. So that was my whole deal. I went off the meds, and I've been off of them for about 15 years until about a month ago.
Yeah.
A month and a half ago now. And I'm still not doing it right. I'm on Lexapro now.
Okay.
And that's it. No mood stabilizer because I want the mania. And that's not advisable.
No, it's not.
Right. I kind of got to a point where I was able to recognize the mania and try to use it for good, and of course I think that.
Yeah.
Because when you're in a mania,
well,
you
and
get
sometimes
that.
It does work that way for a while.
Yeah, for sure. But tell me a little bit about you. Like, where did you grow up?
So I'm a native.
Nice.
I actually grew up about, I don't know, 10 minutes east of here, northeast of here. Graduated from Skyview High School. Actually went to Skyview High School before it was Skyview High School. That happened in my sophomore year. I it was initially brought to my folks' attention that there might be an issue. I had real big challenges in high school. Delusions, hallucinations, loads of fun manic stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Could not figure out why things happened to me that didn't seem to occur with anyone else.
Yeah.
Learned to totally swallow and repress. Would have suicide ideation. And when I would get stressed, I used to wear this necklace. And, of course, this was 1985, 6. Had a crystal unicorn in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And it was chipped on one corner. And so when I would get stressed, I would take my necklace off and I'd sit there and play on my wrist.
Yep.
Not fully cutting. No sure. Self-harm intent. It just became a nervous habit.
Yeah.
Needless to say, you do that every time you get nervous as a high schooler.
Yeah.
And eventually the skin wears away. Mm-hmm. Counselor my sophomore year of school told my mom that he thought I had manic depression. Because, of course, then they didn't even know there were levels to bipolar, much less bipolar itself. Everything was manic depression.
Yeah.
And my mom naturally, oh, no, that can't be it. She's just high strung.
Yeah.
And I was. I was the go-getter. I did competition powerlifting. I was top of my class. I worked 30 hours a week at a job after school.
Yeah. You know,
the whole nine yards. Now, I wasn't manic. I was just a real overachiever.
Yeah.
And that went on. Literally, I started my freshman year of college at Oklahoma State University. I wanted to go pre-law, and they had the most affordable, reputable pre-law program in the country.
Yeah.
Now, granted, I could have gone DU. OSU was half the cost, even out of state.
Sure.
Then DU would have been being a native.
Yeah, DU is no joke.
It's an awesome school.
Yeah.
But they're very proud of themselves.
Yes.
And we always knew that I went into these slumps. Mm-hmm. And like I said, we assumed the mania was just me. That was just my personality.
Yeah.
And so down in Oklahoma and started having some issues with depression. Went and saw the school counselors. And they put me on Zoloft.
Oh, Zoloft.
So, you know, I'm in Stillwater, Oklahoma. My family's all here. My fiancé at the time is here. And I start worrying about the fact that my parents are worrying about me being in Oklahoma, taking medications for the first time, naturally full course load for school, and stopped sleeping completely for 7.5 days. Went about my day, you know, studying, everything's, yeah, I'm in finals, yeah, this is going on. Never once occurred to me that the Zoloft was causing a problem.
Yeah.
Because, again, it didn't occur to me that I had anything other than, okay, I'm in a slump because I'm away from home and I'm homesick and I don't know my fiancé. And
sure.
And I went and it happened that one of my friends in the dorm was a psychology major. And she and I were great friends, so I went and got her at 2 a.m. I had packed up my entire dorm room, labels, the whole nine yards. Went and got my friend, and I said, hey, you need to give me a hand. And she goes, what do you need? And I said, I'm leaving tonight. They're coming to take me, and I need you to get all of this stuff back to my mom, back home in Denver. And she looked, she goes, who's coming to take you? I said, they're coming. They're going to be here any minute now. And I don't remember this episode at all. Mm-hmm. My friends have told it to me so many times, I can practically relive it.
Yeah.
And so she and I went back and forth a bit, and she finally convinced me that before I could go anywhere, because of the amount of stress I'd been under, I really needed to go in and at least make sure that I got any shots that might be required for where I was going. She enlists the dorm leaders, the whole nine yards. And they finally convinced me I have to go to the doctor to get these shots before I can go anywhere.
Smart.
Needless to say, I came out of it 2 days later.
Yeah.
In a hospital bed, in a psych ward.
Yes.
No clue how I got there. Mm-hmm. No clue where I was. They had had to totally ramp me up. They said they had me at twice the recommended dosage. Trying to get me out of it. Mm-hmm. And I finally looked at the doctor and I said, get me out of what?
Yeah.
And he looked and he goes, you're undiagnosed. And I said, I was a little sad. And he looked and he goes, Kimberly, you have manic depression. You've been psychotic for 4 days.
Yeah.
I what? I'm sitting here trying to, and I'm 22 years old. I'm an adult. It's not sure. It's not like I'm a kid. I understand what these things mean.
It's different when you're an adult, when it comes to you as an adult, because you've lived your whole life up to a certain point where the truths of your reality have already been printed in.
Yeah.
And so to be told, guess what? Your reality is about to have a wall removed.
Exactly.
How do you handle that?
It was tough. It was really tough. I was institutionalized for a full 7 days. In part so they could, number one, get the medication at least semi-stabilized. They started me on lithium. Mm-hmm. And that was what they used to get me out of it.
Yeah.
We did find very quickly that that wasn't a sustainable treatment. Mm-hmm. But it was, oh my God, those 7 days. I still remember the rest of the time there. I'd have mornings I would wake up, my face, my pillow, everything was soaked from crying in my sleep.
Yeah. Did you lose time when you were in
just the time that I lost while I was psychotic, when I was in my break.
So they did a good job of keeping you aware of, today's Monday, today's Tuesday.
They did. Like they did. That's good. In fact, it was actually one of the first coping mechanisms I learned, and unfortunately overlearned, is, they would come in, make it 5 minutes. Make it 5 minutes. Because
that's a good one.
The whole concept that I was trying to wrap my head around this. And of course, my folks are still back in Denver.
Yeah.
And they know, the hospital called them when I was institutionalized and said, we have a problem here.
Yeah.
My mom wasn't in a financial position to just up and leave her job at the time to come down.
Right.
And so, but there was a lot of, I would have days I would wake up and I'd ramp as soon as I'd wake up and I couldn't figure out why I can't sit still. I can't stop talking. Mm-hmm. My hands have to move.
Yeah.
And trying to learn and understand all these things that my body and my brain are doing that up until this point were just part of who I was.
Yeah. I mean, you're a powerlifter.
Yeah. Actually, powerlifting probably saved my life.
Yes.
It absolutely probably saved my life.
Drumming
did it for me. Because I used to get...
Like the physicality of really pouring yourself into something.
Yeah.
It that requires all that focus.
Yeah.
And all that energy. And especially something that's going to make you physically exhausted.
Exactly.
By the end of it is so important when you've got that manic energy in you.
Oh, yeah. Especially I used to rage.
Yeah.
And I even, I had an instance in high school. I went to Germany my junior year of high school. Mm-hmm. Spent a year over there. And we had made all the arrangements with the school that I would get credit for my classes there so I wouldn't have to delay graduation because I was going to be gone for a full school year. I came back to a new principal, and he said, oh, we're not honoring that. And I threw my purse across the room. And I said, we will talk to the school board about this. I said, my mother will be in touch with you. Walked out of his office, went down, got my assigned locker because it was the first day of check-in. Tore the door off the locker. I'm like, oh, they're going to make me pay for that.
It always feels
powerlifting.
Good in the moment.
Yeah. Well, and I can't even say I intended to.
Sure.
The rage was so strong.
Yeah.
And powerlifting really helped mitigate that when I didn't know what was going on. Mm-hmm. I would spend 4 hours a day training every day.
Yeah.
So in the hospital, it was hard because I didn't have that sort of an outlet. And so I would walk. And it happened, the hospital was on like 2 or 3 acres of land. And so they would let me go walk.
Yeah.
And as long as I promised not to leave the perimeter, no climbing the fence, mm-hmm. no going out. I wasn't allowed out in front where the parking lot and the cars are.
Yeah.
I had to stay in the back. But I could walk for hours if I had to. So it was weird, but yeah, they definitely helped me maintain a connection with reality.
Yeah.
Which I desperately needed after the break, because I literally came out of it. I didn't know where I was, what had happened. Like I said, I know the story of it just because Stephanie told me like a billion times.
Yeah.
And apparently she got an A+ on a paper after writing about my experience.
See, you're helping people.
So yeah, it was like, well, at least something good came out of that.
Sure.
It took them... So I went home after the end of that school year. I came back to Denver. Mm-hmm. And it was still, it was a solid two or three years at least before we really got my meds down. And like I said, the lithium, my body does this awesome thing where it gets accustomed to medications.
Yeah.
And they stop working mm-hmm. or they have to be increased. And we were right within the first 6 or 8 weeks, we were back up to like twice the recommended dosage of the lithium. And I'm like, guys, we got to try something else.
Yeah.
We're going to destroy my kidneys doing this.
I had the same thing. And I was told that it was because I was hyperactive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that the way that my body would metabolize things. I wish it still did.
Yeah, tell me about it.
But, you know, my metabolism was just running so high because I was so busy all the time and exercising and
yep.
and always doing stuff that it just metabolized the stuff way too fast, and it was just voraciously hungry, even for the medicine.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That tracks for me. And that's, that sounds like it makes sense.
But, yeah, so then... finally got me a Depakote and Wellbutrin, mm-hmm. and that worked really well.
Yeah, Wellbutrin is pretty good because it's pretty mild
yeah.
as far as those kinds of medicines go, and you don't really feel the side effects too bad. They're not real rough like some of the others can be. Lithium can be a real mother when you start it out.
Yeah.
You know, we've come a long way from Prozac.
Oh, yeah, thank God.
Yeah, yeah, and Zoloft is scary too.
Oh, it's... And that's the first thing they told me. They go, why did they give you Zoloft? And I said, well, I was depressed.
Yeah.
And they said, well, didn't they talk to you about these types of behaviors? And I said,
yeah,
but I've always acted that way. Mm-hmm. And that's when the psychiatrist looked at me and he goes, for how long? And I said, as long as I can remember. I said, I'm always energetic and on the go. I said, it's not uncommon, at least... I said, probably once every 6 months, maybe even more frequent. I said, I can't sleep, so I have to rearrange my entire room.
Yeah.
And everything has to be cleaned and polished and put away. And that's when he looked. He goes, you definitely have manic depression.
Yeah.
He goes, most people would recognize those as manic behaviors. And I'm like, and it did. It took me, my 20s were rough.
Yeah.
Trying to get used to it, a few bouts of self-medication, thanks to alcohol.
Of course. Yeah, that's a good one because it's real easy to get and it's socially acceptable.
Exactly. Exactly. And if you need to medicate over what's socially acceptable, you can just do that at home all by yourself.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, and then at 25, I got married. Bad idea, but I got married. I had this thought in my head that I was never going to get married.
Yeah.
And so I married someone I knew was absolutely wrong for me. But.
Were you trying to prove it to you or the world?
To me. It was, you know, it was entirely my fear.
It
was entirely my fear. And, but in the process, I ended up with my son.
Yeah.
I was about 27. About 27, we started trying. And I talked to my psychiatrist at the time, and he said, you're probably not going to have a whole lot of success with this at your current dosage. And my husband at the time was adamant. He had to have a kid. Hmm. And I'm like, so I went back to the psychiatrist, and I said, all right, what are my options? I don't want to go crazy again. Mm-hmm. But what choice do I have? And he said, well, he goes, we've come a long ways with behavior modifications. He said, we can try and do some work on that and see what we can do. And so I went through 9.5 months of 3-time-a-week behavior modification training.
Yeah. The CBT, cognitive behavioral. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Learn to compartmentalize, box things, more time boxing. Mm-hmm. In fact, at this point, I still am completely time dependent OCD.
Yeah.
I have to know what time it is all the time, every yes. time.
Oh, my God. Me too. Absolutely. Yeah. People think I'm nuts.
No, it's a survival technique.
Yes, it is.
100% a survival technique. Because if you can make it the next minute, then you can make it the minute after that.
Yeah.
And if you don't know what minute it is, then you don't know if you can make it.
Yeah. I always needed to know how long it took to get places. I mm-hmm. used to obsessively use my stopwatch.
Yeah.
So that I knew how long it took to get from one place to another so that I could file it away for later.
Exactly.
So that I know it takes 17 and a half minutes to get here.
Exactly.
And I still do it to this day, yep. just more subtly.
Yeah. My mom still laughs at me because, we'll plan to go somewhere. And I'm like, all right. I said, I'll be there in about 23 minutes.
Yeah.
And she goes, Kimberly. And I said, it'll be 23 minutes, Mom.
Yeah.
We don't argue about this anymore. We've done yep. this for 20 years.
Yeah.
We know it's going to be 23 minutes.
Yes.
I physically cannot say it'll be about 20 minutes. Yeah. I just can't do it.
Yep.
But so we managed to get through that, and I managed to come off meds. And a year later, we had my son Thomas, who's an awesome, amazing kid who's now 16. Which is loads of fun, frankly.
Oh yeah, I got a 16-year-old. He's really something.
Yeah, and fortunately, so far Thomas isn't symptomatic. He's had a few angsty drama moments.
Sure.
But he hasn't shown any symptoms yet.
Yeah.
So my fingers are crossed if we can make it to adulthood that.
Yeah.
Hopefully, I won't have passed that on to him. Because that was the whole reason I had chosen originally not to have children as soon as I was diagnosed.
That's what terrified me too about becoming a father was the because I mean my two kids that I had with my first wife I was so worried about everything, just terrified the whole time.
Yeah.
Probably until they were 10 years old, I was terrified.
Yep.
And then less terrified for quite a stretch. And then, it wasn't until, honestly, it wasn't until we got divorced that, it all really started to click.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like I was becoming a real parent. I think I was pushing a lot of it off out of fear and being in my own head and whatever. And the situation allowed me to do it.
Yeah.
It just was what it was. And then it was, I became aware of it and it was, no, I really got to show up here.
Yeah.
So I did. And, divorce is one of those things where, no good marriages end in divorce.
Exactly.
So it was ultimately really good for everybody. One of my kids lives with me here in Colorado, and the other one still lives in Michigan and comes and hangs out in the summertime and all that. And we're all really tight.
Small world syndrome.
Yeah.
My ex-husband's from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's so many Michigan people coming to Colorado. It's the nature, I think.
Yeah.
But, yeah, one of my sons came out with some trouble, and the other one didn't.
Yeah.
And so it was just, you roll the dice. And then the thing that I'm discovering now was with my one son, the one who ended up having problems,
mm-hmm.
It was, okay, well, there's solutions for everything.
Yeah.
So let's fix it. I'm in a better position than my parents were.
Yeah.
Because they didn't know what the hell to do with it.
Yeah. Well.
And it's not their fault.
Yeah.
Eventually they did the best they could with it. My father came from the counseling world.
Oh, okay.
He was a alcoholic and then became a substance abuse counselor.
Okay.
So in his 30s. Went to school, was like, I'm going to do this. I found a purpose in life. I'm going to help people. It's like, awesome.
Yeah.
Good for you. And so that's what he did until he retired. substance abuse counselor.
Yeah.
And so that was definitely interesting growing up as a musician and rock bands. And
yeah, and everything that goes along with that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and my dad was a musician too, so he was well aware.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, and plus, I mean, he was an alcoholic before, you know, so it wasn't his first rodeo.
Yeah, you're not going to get away with much either.
Yeah, definitely didn't get away with a lot. But, I mean, he also understood it, so he was like, all right, let's try to minimize the damage here.
Yeah.
And he would just say things once in a while, like he came home from work one day with this card, and he was like, thought you'd think this was interesting. And then he gave it to me and walked away, and it was a card of all of the different street drugs and then how they affect your body mm-hmm. and what they do. And I was, you know, I mean, I was in the era of Nancy Reagan, you know, like weed, heroin, all of it's the same thing. You just say no.
Right.
But then the first time you smoke weed and you don't die, you're like, oh, so drugs are okay.
Yeah.
Well, why not meth? why not cocaine? You know, but once I had this card in front of me, it was like, oh, acid makes your brain bleed? I'm not doing that. So that was kind of nice. It's kind of strange the way that, you know, you evolve as a human being and you try to pass on everything that you've learned to your kids, especially as a parent.
Yeah.
You don't realize how frightening all of that is going to be until you're staring at, you know, the mistakes that you made and someone else is doing it. And the very way that you didn't listen, they're not listening.
Exactly.
And you realize that you're having the same head against a brick wall conversation your parents had with you on certain things. But then you also realize the ways in which you can improve.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. And there's no shame in saying, yeah, I feel like maybe my parents didn't get this thing right. You know, love them to death, but
yeah.
They didn't get this thing right, and that's okay, because they did the best they could. So,
and by the time our kids are adults,
they're
going to have stuff that it's like, you know,
you're going to mess them up.
They tried, and it's funny, because my son and I talk, so I'm fairly open about my illness.
Yeah.
I definitely don't have a billboard. You're not going to see me splashing it all over Facebook or Instagram.
Sure.
But I'm really open to the conversation.
Yeah.
And part of it is I'm safer when people around me know.
Yeah.
Especially because I tend to go manic.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, 25 years into this, I don't always realize when I'm going manic.
Yeah.
And so from the time my kid was tiny, we talked about the fact that mom's brain doesn't always work. And of course, as he was short, that was all I needed to know.
Yeah.
You know, mom has a really emotional day. Mom's in a real bad mood.
Yeah.
Mom's, and all I had to tell him was, mom's brain isn't working. You need to give me a little space.
Mm-hmm.
And he understood what that meant. And as he's gotten older, obviously, we've talked more further and in depth about it. I had an episode, well, I technically had four episodes that began just over 2 years ago. And part of it, I moved from a private office into a large cubicle pod.
Mm-hmm.
I'd been in my private office for 7 years with almost no stimuli.
Yeah.
Into an open air pod arrangement around 67 other people.
Yeah.
Then I got we had a reorg at work. I was remodeling my kitchen. And then we had some health stuff that went on with my kid. And it was four back-to-back manic cycles.
Yeah.
I would just almost get out of one. And at the time, I was in an off-meds mode, and I was managing behaviorally.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one, I almost got through, and that's when the reorg hit. And it just ramped right back up.
Yeah.
And altogether, it was four episodes over 6 months. I finally started coming out of the last one and told my boss and my CIO, said, all right, guys, I need new tools.
Yeah.
This isn't working. So back in therapy I go, back to the psychiatrist I go, back on Seroquel I go. And I've been fortunate. I've had really good luck with Seroquel.
Nice.
It's
always great when you find the one that works.
Yeah. And it's a different one for everyone.
But yeah.
For me, fortunately, and like I said, I do, because I've had the skilling to do the behavior therapy,
mm-hmm.
And my psychiatrist fortunately is on board with it. I've had a few psychiatrists that haven't been.
Mm-hmm.
That have said, no, you have to do the maximum dose regardless. And I'm like, I don't want that crap in my body.
Yeah.
You know, you trade your body for your brain on meds. Mm-hmm. You really do. So my psychiatrist, we started ramping to 300. Mm-hmm. And he said, let's see how that goes. He said, are you going? I said, I've already got an appointment for therapy. And I found EMDR. And just a phenomenal therapist. Yeah. She was just awesome. And the first session I had with her, I sat down and I'm like, okay, I haven't had to reboot this whole thing in 20 years.
Yeah.
I said, tell me there are new tools out there. And she goes, oh, we got tons of new tools.
Yeah.
If it's been 20 years since your last heavy therapy session, she goes, trust me, we got lots of tools.
Yeah.
And part of what I had done was because I'd relied on the same tools that I relied on when I went off meds the first time to have my son, mm-hmm. which were not terrible tools, but we found that I learned to do a lot of things as far as protecting myself and protecting those around me. I never learned how to deal with the stuff I was protecting myself from.
Yeah.
So
that's a whole other set of tools.
Yeah. Compartmentalization had gotten completely out of control. Mm-hmm. I was at the point where everything went in a box.
Yeah.
I'm happy. Okay. Put it in a box.
Yeah.
I'm sad. Oh, put it in a box. And so it took us 6 months to unravel that entire mess. Mm-hmm. But that was my last round. I'm like, okay. And the psychiatrist told me, he goes, you're probably not coming off meds again.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what? I'm 46. Well, then I was 44.
Yeah.
I have a 16-year-old. I've been a single mom for 13 years. Don't know that I have an issue with that.
Yeah.
I don't know that I really have anything in my life that would require me not to take medication at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the initial instance was so I could have my kid. Mm-hmm. I've always fought for the low doses because I wanted my kid to grow up seeing normal emotions.
Yeah.
Mom needs to be able to feel things.
Yeah. And when you get the medication at the higher levels, it can definitely suppress the things that are going to cause you problems, but it suppresses other things too.
Yeah, exactly.
I was on a particularly strong, like way too strong cocktail of things. It was because it was Wellbutrin, Depakote, and one other thing, as a matter of fact.
Oh, and Lord.
I'm trying to remember what it was, but I was on all three of those things, and it was my kids were still little, and I had a thought one day that what if the house burned down? And I didn't feel anything.
Yeah.
When I had that thought, it's like, you know, with the kids inside, what would I do? Well, you know, I'd try to get them out. You know, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, well, I'd stand there and watch them burn.
Right.
It wasn't anything like that. It wasn't that bad, but it was bad enough that it was, it made me recognize how much I was disassociated from everything. I just felt like I was looking out of my eyes and piloting this thing around.
Yeah.
You know, going to work and eating dinner and doing the things. And that was when I decided I got to do something about this. This is too much. There's a ceiling on it. But that's why I think therapy is so important in conjunction with medication, because they can really help you get in touch with your feelings on things. Because if you're just deferring to the expert on what your levels are supposed to be like,
right,
but you don't really know how to articulate what you're going through emotionally in any sort of a realistic way, then you can't really tell if the meds are working the way they're intended.
Exactly.
And you have to trust yourself just as much as you're trusting them.
Yeah. Well, and it's, you know, my therapist brought it up. You know, you can't medicate a bad behavior.
Yeah.
You can medicate the chemicals that might make you more inclined to indulge in that behavior.
Uh-huh.
But you can't medicate the behavior.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely, and that's brilliant.
That's one of the biggest, one of my first therapists had told me that, and my latest one had reiterated it, that, you know, a lot of people do. They go to the psychiatrist and they say, okay, give me my pills to make me feel better.
Yes.
And then they go on with life. And she said the problem is mental illness isn't just about your pills.
Right.
Yes, you have chemicals that don't work. And I always explain to everyone, I have diabetes in my brain.
Yes. Precisely.
And,
If you're not making the chemicals right yourself, store-bought's fine.
Yep, exactly. I am all about it. But at the same time, it's, you know, and I've, when I was going through it, I was in touch with my boss and my CIO. Mm-hmm. And the CIO and I have been friends for years. We've worked together for 5.5 years now. Mm-hmm. My boss is fairly new to things, but fortunately, he's a great boss. But so told them as we were going through, I'm like, okay, I'm going to have days where I'm going to go lock myself in a conference room. I said, but I promise I'm getting better.
Yeah.
I said, I promise if you see behaviors that you're not sure about, I said, tell me.
Yes.
Because I'm relearning a whole bunch of stuff. I said, it's no different than if you put me on a new project and I'm not making my deliverables.
Yeah.
I said, if you see me start doing wonky stuff, don't hesitate to tell me.
Yeah, because people will not be having a hard time of talking about you instead of to you.
Yeah.
If they think that's going to be easier.
Well, yeah. And
so
that's,
being
we
able
have...
to articulate that to your boss is phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really lucky with my leadership right now.
Yeah.
And we have a number of people in the department that love to be chatty Cathys anyway. And that's like part of what I told him. I said, to be honest, you're probably going to hear other people talking about me before you guys are going to notice anything's wrong. I said, but listen to them. Mm-hmm. See if it's valid.
Yeah.
So, and that's been, like I said, we just went up again 6 months ago. So I'm at 400 to 600 now. Mm-hmm. And that was just... Well, part of it, not to embarrass you if it does, I started going through menopause. Mm-hmm. And that's always been our last big scare.
Yeah.
When your brain doesn't work to begin with and it's all chemically and hormonally balanced, mm-hmm. what happens when they start going away?
Right.
Fortunately, all it took so far is a 100 meg dose. And everything else seems to be fine.
That's good.
But yeah, my kid cracks me up. We were talking last night. I can't remember what started the conversation. And my kid and I have random, we have the most random conversations. He is just awesome.
Yeah.
And he's talking about something. Oh, I know what it was. We were horsing around on Facebook and found some video of these guys getting these unicorn mohawks.
Yeah.
So all this bright, bright rainbow hair and trim on the side. And my son has dark brown, almost black hair down past his shoulders.
Uh-huh.
And so I joked. I said, dude, I found your next hairstyle. You need to come do this. And so he comes out of the kitchen because he was cooking his dinner. He comes out of the kitchen. He looks. He goes, no, we're not doing that, Mom. And I'm like, dude, seriously, that would be so cool. You could go to your job interview and you would be a walking unicorn.
Yeah.
And he looks and he goes, hang on a second, Mom. And he goes back in the kitchen and he goes over and I hear my pill bottle. And he goes, okay, you took them last night. And I'm like... Dude, he goes,
come on.
Just figured I'd check, Mom, you know?
Yeah.
He goes, that hairstyle is almost as crazy as you off meds. And I laughed and I said, dude, I'm not that bad. And he goes, Mom, in algebra today, we learned about the exact expression for you off your meds. And I'm like, oh, this I got to hear. He goes, it's called exponential destruction.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, then. Thanks, dude. But I love the fact that he and I can have those conversations.
Yes.
I've been able to be open enough with him. And we don't. We, from the time he was short, the big rule in the house was no secrets.
Yeah.
And obviously, we both know as adults, there are always some things that we aren't 100% honest about.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, I've always been an open book for him. Mm-hmm. And so as he's growing up, he's an open book for me.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, he's 16 now, so he's practically a person.
Yeah, I know. That every so often he walks by me and I'm like, where did my kid go?
Yeah.
You know, there was a time he was this short. He's now 6.5 feet tall.
Oh, geez.
Oh, yeah. He's my gentle giant. But, and like I said, outside of one totally emotional thing that went on, he's been solid. Mm-hmm.
Well, he grew up with it. I mean, he grew up with the idea, so it was probably a lot less scary than, you know, than it was for you to discover it for yourself at an adult age.
Yeah, it and it's part of why we're so open. Mm-hmm. is, you know, I don't want him to ever feel. And fortunately, he's invoked it a couple times now. But mm-hmm. we always have had the rule, tell me you got something big, dude, my world stops.
Yeah.
I don't care if I'm in the middle of a negotiation. I don't care if I'm talking to Nana. I don't care if we're driving to a race. Tell me you got something big. I said, and I promise, Mom's world stops.
Yeah.
And we've had two instances now where, one, he came out as bi.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I love the kid to death. He doesn't do this till like, 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
I'm like, I could work on the timing. I'm supposed to be up at 4:30. But, yeah,
good for you. I'll see you at breakfast.
Yeah. Well, and that's about as far as that one went, frankly, because he came up and he's like, Mom, I got something big. And I'm just getting ready for bed. I'm like, come on in, dude. What you got?
Yeah.
And he goes, I think I'm bi. I said, okay, so what you got?
Yeah.
And he goes, well, that's it. I said, okay. That's awesome.
Yeah. Good for you. And he goes, you're 16, of yeah. course.
I'm like, okay. And he goes, well, that was easy. And I said, did you really think that one would be hard? And he goes, not really with you. He goes, it's different. And I said, I know it is.
Yeah.
I said, and I'll tell you right now, you have new rules. Mm-hmm. I said, no more male sleepovers.
Yeah.
And he kind of looked. He goes, well, I said, Brady's fine. Because he and Brady have been best friends since fourth grade.
Yeah.
And Brady's literally straight as an arrow.
Right.
That boy spends more time chasing girls than anyone I ever seen. I'm like, Brady's fine. I said, but dude, seriously, you bring friends home from high school and the door stays open. Same yeah. rule for boys and for girls. Mm-hmm. There will be no questions about what goes on in my house.
Yep.
He goes, that's it? I said, really, dude, that's it.
Yeah.
He goes, okay. The one before that actually is part of what spun him into his bad space. He went on a school trip.
Mm-hmm.
Met his first crush. Had his first kiss.
Mm-hmm.
Had his first breakup.
Oh, the first breakup.
All in one trip.
That was, yeah, they happen fast yeah. at that age, don't
and
they?
And so, you know, pick him up at the airport when he got back. And he told me, he goes, I'm not in a real good space right now, Mom. He told me what happened. And I'm like, all right. I said, I have to be honest, dude. I don't know how boys deal with this.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of those types of conversations of, you know, I don't know how boys do this.
Yeah.
And his dad isn't, his dad's in the picture, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
But his dad isn't one of these, oh, here, let me show you how to be a man type dads.
He's right, right.
Let's just go have some fun and then I'll see you again in 6 months.
Yeah.
So I spend a lot of time calling on male friends saying, mm-hmm. how do you tie a tie?
Yeah.
How do you shave? How do I teach my kid to do this?
Yeah. My stepson grew up the same way. My current wife, you know, it was her and her son. Against the world, you know, forever and ever and ever.
Yep.
And dad wasn't really in the picture at all.
Yeah.
And she was like, okay, that's cool. And went about her life. But,
yeah.
you know, there were so many little things where it was like, I gotta ask a male friend, like,
oh, yeah.
What are we
puberty
doing here?
Puberty was, I fortunately, I have a couple of male friends that I've had for decades now.
Yeah.
And so they're the kinds of friends I can talk to about anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I called them. What do I do about this? He's taking a 2-hour shower.
Yeah.
Pat goes, he's not taking a shower, Kim.
Right, yeah.
He's 11.
Yep.
And it's, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
Mental illness or not,
mm-hmm.
there's nothing that prepares you for that.
Of course not.
It
just so happens that now you also have all of these other things. But in a way, you are sort of uniquely tied in to an understanding of the idea of being able to deal with something that's
yeah.
that's happening. I think that people who have a mental illness and recognize it and do something about it, as much as it can be difficult to trust your own emotions – because they've spent so much of your life betraying you.
Yeah.
You second guess them so often. When you see other behaviors, those same analytics come into play.
Yeah.
And so I think that can be really helpful. And in a lot of ways, it's helped. I know it's helped me as a parent.
Yeah.
Because I can be analytical about those things. And I can be impartial and... you know, just listen and non-judgmental and just go, so this is what's happening.
Yeah.
And now what?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's probably great.
It's definitely never boring.
Yeah. Well, I mean, nothing is. I mean, especially once the kids get to that age. But you are also dealing with your own stuff at the same time. And so it's two individuals living together.
Yeah.
Going through things. And the fact that you're open with each other about what's going on is really helpful.
Yeah.
Because then there's no guessing.
Well, exactly.
And especially if you're the kind of person that you are, where if left to your own devices, guessing is not going to be good.
No, we don't do that any more than we absolutely have to.
Yeah.
And in fact, they've even at work, it's funny because when the dust settled and as I was going through therapy and could start talking about the episodes and what went on, mm-hmm. of course, you know, both my boss and my CIO were like, what could we have done?
Yeah.
What could we have done different? And I said, to be honest, I said, 90% of it wasn't even anything you did. Mm-hmm. I said, number one, you cannot make me go manic.
Uh-huh.
I said, we all knew, we had all talked about the fact that me moving out of my private office and into the pod was going to be a struggle. We all knew that. Mm-hmm. I said, slamming me with an unannounced reorg right after that, I could have done without. I said, if you haven't noticed, I don't do surprises at all.
Yeah.
Oh. I said, surprises are a really, really bad thing for me. I said, I just can't process them fast enough.
Yeah.
And so I've gotten, you know, some leeway. They'll at least tell me if changes are coming through. Obviously, they can't tell me the details. They have to be able to be managers. But if we have things like we just were in the second phase of a reorganization right now. Mm-hmm. I knew the reorg was coming 2 months ago. I didn't know who was getting reorged, mm-hmm. other than I knew it wasn't impacting me personally.
Yeah.
But I knew the change was coming. Mm-hmm. I can work off that. That's all I have to know. I don't have to know who's going, who's coming, who's reporting to who. I just need to know the change is coming so I'm prepared for the change.
Yeah.
And so we've been able to help put things like that in place at work. My kid's great about it. He's figured out a long time ago, we just don't surprise mom.
Yeah. So what are some of the tools that you've tried to figure out to minimize that, the let's say the damage of surprise when it comes in?
Well, a lot of it, so one of the biggest tools I use, frankly, is, and it, part of it is because I have the time-dependent OCD at this point.
Yeah.
Even if it's behavioral. We plan about a month out.
Yeah.
For everything. Mm-hmm. Get out the school calendar, the band calendar, the scout calendar, my folks calendars, and we keep a physical calendar on the wall.
Yeah.
Even in this digital age, mm-hmm. I have a physical calendar on the wall.
Yes.
And so I know well in advance all the stuff I know is coming. Mm-hmm. As soon as we know anything changes, it goes on the calendar. Mm-hmm. And therefore, when surprises come, everything else is already running smoothly.
It minimizes.
So it's more of a bump than it is this huge, oh my God, the world's falling.
Yeah.
Because I'm not trying to juggle his activities and my activities and work and deadlines and everything all the time. I already have all of that going on autopilot.
Yeah.
And so that stuff isn't stuff that I'm actively managing anymore. It's there and it will go the way it's supposed to go. And we will get up at the same time every morning. And that's, you know, my schedule and my whole family cracks the jokes about it. But it is, you don't screw with my schedule.
Yeah.
You just don't. But because my schedule is so regimented and so effectively so, it helps me free up. Oh, a last minute event came up. All right. We can choose. Do we go? Do we not go? It isn't a crisis, oh my God, I don't know how to move, mm-hmm. which a few years ago it would have been.
Yeah.
You know, a few years ago, yeah, that's all it took was for me to be in a meeting 10 minutes late and I would lose the whole rest of my day.
Right.
I couldn't think, I couldn't act, everything was off. And so being able to train myself to put those items on an autopilot, and mm-hmm. I know if it's on the calendar, if it's on my work calendar, it's already done. I've already made the plans for it. I know it's going to happen. It's much easier for me to shift with other things when they come up.
Yeah.
And it was a skill it was one of the first skills the therapist and I worked on when I went back in a couple years ago. Because I do work in a job. I'm an IT asset manager.
Mm-hmm.
And so I manage my company's hardware and software. At the moment, I'm standing up a new asset repository, which is the software I use to do all that.
Yeah.
We have a lot of last minute stuff going on because we're a week out from go live. So, Thomas and I talked on Monday and I told him, I said, dude, here's my work calendar. This is what my world looks like. And here's my list of stuff I have to accomplish this week. Mm-hmm. So I said, if the world's going to blow up, can it blow up on Wednesday or Thursday and not on Friday?
Yeah.
And so for him, it helps too, because he knows the days where I'm going to be under more pressure and under more stress and I'm running more already.
Yeah.
Those are the days that he really brings his A game as well to say, okay, I'm not going to be late to school. I'm not going to have any last minute activities that come up. Mm-hmm. If I do, I'm going to come to mom with the whole game plan and have rides arranged and the whole nine yards. Mm-hmm. And so he's really good about mitigating from that aspect as well. It isn't that I get a call at 4 o'clock. Oh, by the way, mom, I need a ride over to Jeremy's house tomorrow night.
Yeah.
He's gotten into that habit of, okay, mom, I want to do something that we hadn't planned on. Here's what I want to do, how I'm going to get there, how I'm going to get home, what I need to do it.
Yeah.
Can I do it or not? And again, as long as it's presented in a planned manner, it isn't as much of a surprise anymore. It's okay, here's one additional thing that's come up.
Yeah.
And they do. And we have a plan of attack for it, so I'm good.
Yeah. Yeah, I have that exact same thing. I am the same way. My wife tried to throw me a surprise party for my birthday.
Oh, heavens.
When I walked in the door and everyone was there and they shouted surprise, she said, you know what? It didn't even occur to me. She said, the look on your face said everything. Because I felt like I stood there for about a year before I could say any words.
Trying to get your brain to figure out what was going on. And
I was terrified, stiff. And my first thought was, how dare you people be in my house? Get the fuck out of here.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, that was all I could think of in the moment. And then she said it only took about 10 seconds for me to compose myself. But that means I was standing there for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Just.
Oh, yeah.
And then everybody had a good laugh about it. But I'm good natured, so I recovered and it was fine.
Yeah.
But man, was that weird. I still have moments like that where something will come up unexpected. And you would think that it would. I always looked at these sort of personality things and these things that are tied to the mental illness. I always looked at them like, if it's a problem, it's got to have a solution. And so if I solve the Rubik's Cube, I can put it on the shelf and then I won't have the problem anymore, but it doesn't work that
way. Not quite.
Yeah. You can solve the Rubik's Cube, but you're still carrying it around.
Yeah.
And all it means is now you've found a solution, but you still have the problem.
Yeah.
And so it's, the solution is, like you said, let's minimize. I know I'm going to be this way, so let's minimize what's going to cause an issue. And letting your coworkers know, they don't have to understand everything.
Right.
About it. They just have to know, this is what I got, this is what I'm dealing with, and it'd be a lot easier for me if these things didn't go. I mean, if these things didn't happen on these days versus these days.
Yep.
Because they don't have to understand everything that's going on, the gears that are turning in your head. They just need to understand that you're saying, this is what I need.
Yep.
So you're advocating for yourself and saying out loud to someone instead of hoping they figure it out.
Yeah.
And too many people take too much time to hope that they figure it out. But I mean, if you're a person like us, you almost don't have that luxury because if it goes sideways, it can really go sideways.
Yeah, it'll go very, very sideways very quickly.
Yeah. But that's great that you've managed to put all of these things together. Get your coping mechanisms in place, get to understand yourself, and recognize when things aren't going the way that they should be, and to take steps to work on that.
Yeah, it's definitely easier now than it was 20 years ago.
So many things are.
Yeah.
A lot of wisdom does come with age.
Oh, yeah.
And that's one of the good things about it. Well, thanks for talking to me today.
Oh, no, thank you.
I appreciate it.
I think it's been good.
I told you that was going to be wonderful. And you know what? I don't mean to brag, but I think I was right. And I think you know it. That was a wonderful conversation. I can't thank Kim enough for coming by the show. If you want to be on the show, contact me. I'll talk to anybody at this point. info@coffeeoversuicide.com. And, you know, let's get your story out there. Let's normalize this for everybody. You know, you can also get yourself a t-shirt, get a sticker, get a coffee mug. You can go to coffeeoversuicide.com, and there's a link to the store. You can check that out. Every little bit helps keep the lights on here. And as always, until next week, don't kill yourselves out there.